Our Ludicrous Future is supported by Masterworks. Masterworks is the platform for investing in contemporary blue chip art for just a fraction of what billionaire investors pay. Investments in art were previously limited to just the super wealthy, but Masterworks is changing all of that. Based on data and science, Masterworks looks at art trends and appreciation value projections and then purchases art and makes it available to its members. The art is held until Masterworks finds the best time to sell it. And then once they do that, once they sell it, the returns are distributed to you, the investors. Masterworks also offers a secondary market in which members can actually buy and sell shares to other members, so you don't have to wait for the piece to be sold. Art is an alternative asset and one that can help you diversify your portfolio, which is especially important in a time of record high inflation and market volatility. In the past 25 years, the art market has emerged as one of the most stable, with returns of 14% across that time frame. Masterworks is giving everyday people like you and me the opportunity to invest in the art world, and you can get started today at masterworks.art/OLF. Skip the waitlist and invest in blue chip art pieces at masterworks.art/OLF. Who do you listen to, Tim? What is your inspiration? What is who's your musical god that you pray to?
Oh, man. I would say... Oh, God, that changes all the time. But I feel like long-term-wise, like, I've been a big fan of Death Cab for Cutie forever. A band called Mew. I like Sigur Rós. I like, I don't know, a lot of, like, math rock bands.
I know, you always send that over. It's so cool.
Yeah, I love math rock stuff. Like Animals Battles? As Leaders. Battles is cool. That's I was trying to think of Battles the other day, and I could not think of their stupid name. Even though it's not a stupid name, it's actually an awesome name, but I just... sitting there like, what is that band? I could not figure it out.
Yeah.
Is this how we started the show, by the way? Are we?
Yeah. We are in. I mean, that's what people are here for, Tim. They want to know how to be more like you. That's what I want to know, anyways.
I love that we gave up on like intros and talking about what we're going to talk about. We're just like farting into a conversation.
Yeah.
That's a whole new thing. We got a new style.
I mean, it worked for Joe Rogan, right? I mean, he's kind of successful in this space. He like doesn't even have a plan. We at least have things that we talked about we're going to talk about, right? Like we at least have stories that are listed to talk about.
Exactly. Yeah. Should I tell you guys what crazy stuff has been happening in some stuff?
Hit us with the space news.
Well, you leave your house from time to time, so I want to hear what that's like.
What is the outside world like?
Yeah.
Outside, there is... a red sky, sulfuric acid.
What?
No, that
does the sun burn you? I heard it burns you.
Exactly. So let's see. Yeah, I've had a pretty busy month of traveling around. We're working on that news van that I bought that I talked to you guys about last time. I think last time we talked, I had just like we officially owned it. But then since then, we ended up getting it down to, so Andrew drove it from North Carolina to Dallas, and I took it from Dallas down to Brownsville. And that lined up with when I did another interview with Elon, like
cool.
3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Did you post it already?
No, not yet.
Oh.
I think today, by the end of day, I should have the final bits of notes for like what things I can and cannot show. Like legally. But yeah, it's actually not bad.
They're like, hey, what's that little green man over there? Like, oh, don't worry about that.
Yeah. Don't show that. Blur that out.
Well, I did see some headlines and thumbnails saying he created a fusion reactor and a warp drive and stuff. So this is probably hidden under a tarp somewhere.
That's right.
It just happened.
Oh, God.
But in general, like SpaceX is actually really easy to work with about that kind of stuff. I mean, they're really cool. They just have to make sure that things like, I don't know, like anything that is ITAR sensitive. So international treaty and arms regulations. But again, they're like really chill about it. They're also really chill about most things, but some things like just making sure things are okay to share, you know, I don't know. They have to go over everything. So, so hopefully I'll be able to release that soon. But then I went home. Finished a video. Did you hear that? Finished a video.
Is this the one I think I just saw pop up about how to start rocket engines or something?
It's how to power a rocket engine. Yep. Cycles. Yep. Exactly. And then I came back down and we started building out the van and we actually like got really far we have a workable, it's working. Like, it's not done yet with the, like, add some, the exterior panel and finish up a few other things, like the intercom system and stuff like that. But it's like, it's pretty much done.
Have I you mean, named not it? Done,
but yeah. It's
Mars
Luna.
V. Oh.
It's like Luna, Mars Van. Locational uplinking networking asset. And I like that it's kind of like the moon, because the moon like orbits around, you know, like, so it's like, we'll take this thing around all over the place.
Clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was working on a script about kind of laying out the entire Artemis program plan. There's a lot of acronyms. Some of them are impressive. So you're on that level.
Which one's your favorite?
Well, there's PRISM, there's Viper.
Wait. Yeah. PRISM. The NSA one.
I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you what it stands for.
The whole Edward Snowden thing.
Was, is that what he was talking about?
Yeah, the program was called PRISM.
Okay.
It was like a different one. The world's largest social network. You're already on there, and so are all of your friends. you have no choice.
Would it be safe to say he went to PRISM prison?
Ooh.
You're welcome.
We're all very impressed. But
I also still like, the one thing that always comes up in for the Artemis program is the term NRHO, which is near rectilinear halo orbit. Like, that's just the most nerdy sounding, like, you know, like, orbital parameter ever. They're like, quick, they got into a near rectilinear halo orbit. You know, get them. I don't know.
Blue team,
rectilinear sounds like it could go up your butt or something. Rectilinear. Oh, there's one called Trident too.
I haven't even heard of that one.
Is this
Prime One?
Is this a requirement for your job? Like, if you go work at NASA or something, it's like good at making acronyms. Is like
acronyms.
Like, hired.
No matter what. Yeah. Like, okay.
That's the one thing I could do at NASA is make acronyms for things.
our mission name is actually Tyrannosaurus 78. Now make it work.
Yeah.
That's like, transport for rectilinear.
Anal. Oh, jeez. Right, yeah. Joe, you have to bring back the Bureau of Naming Things or whatever that skit was.
I need to do another sketch like that.
Yeah. That was my favorite one ever.
That was mine too. I think that was definitely my favorite thing, honestly. Yeah.
I need to get back into the sketches. I've been kind of just trying to get stuff out lately.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys what I'm excited about though? What just happened last week earlier this week that was really, really, really fun.
Let's hear it.
Ben, you might want to pull up a tweet from Peter Beck that I linked
Ooh.
You.
I can try to do that.
Because this was really cool. Did you happen to see this, Joe? The
from the helicopter?
Lab? Yeah.
I mean, I just saw it when you kind of threw it up a second ago, but
if you look at Peter underscore J underscore Beck, the CEO and founder of Rocket Lab's Twitter feed, you'll see a rocket dangling from a parachute and some people inside of a helicopter flying towards it. Now, what's cool about this, they've tested this a whole bunch, the idea of catching a rocket with a parachute for ultimately hoping to be able to catch one from space. And that's exactly what this actually is. On Monday, for the mission, oh my gosh, what was it called? Not Return to Sender. Which one was it?
There and Back Again? Or
There and
like
Back
that?
Again. There we go. Thank you.
I think I saw that somewhere.
Yep, There and Back Again. Was their first attempt at actually catching one of their rockets, the rocket booster, after it had already, you know, gone through stage separation and sent the second stage off on its way into orbit. And then it fell back to Earth. And survived reentry and then pulled a parachute once it was slow enough to do so. And then the helicopter successfully did hook up with it and carry it and catch it. The problem is they ended up having to drop it. They pulled pulled the plug on it once they did snag it. For some reason, that just wasn't the helicopter pilot said it just wasn't feeling right. You know, in other words, it just wasn't easy to control, and obviously you have human lives on board the helicopter. No space hardware is worth risking the lives of those on board of the helicopter. So he ended up letting go, which is no big deal because it still ended up having time to redeploy its chute. You know, the chute, once they let go, reinflated and softly splashed down in the ocean. They were able to retrieve it. Actually, if you look through Peter Beck's Twitter here, he's actually got a few extra pictures and stuff of recovery.
How is he not verified, by the way?
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that honestly crazy?
He's like the reason why they invented that feature, right?
Yeah.
Do you think Elon will verify him?
No, I think Elon's actually a pretty big fan of Peter Beck, honestly. How could you not be? Peter Beck is awesome. He really is. So look at this. You get a shot of their sea vessel there. Has this giant like robotic crane arm thing that grabs onto the booster, bobbing around in the ocean, and is able to pick it up and put it onto this cradle there. How cool is that?
It's got its own canadarm.
It does. So that makes me wonder.
It's a rectilinear orbit if I've ever seen one.
So let me teach you guys a little fun thing about they're eventually they want to just fly the helicopter straight out to where the rocket's, you know, reentering, and they want to just fly it all the way back, is my understanding. Is fly it all the way back to land. And that's what Peter Beck told me last time I spoke with him in December. But for these early ones, they're basically grabbing onto it and then laying it down on a sea vessel. I think so they have more margins for safety, you know, more fuel margins, more everything, you know, just making it safer. I think that's why they're doing it this way. Because Peter Beck made it sound like sea vessels are just hilariously expensive. So they're trying everything they can to not have to send this out to sea. But
I wonder how far. I mean, yeah, because the like fuel of a helicopter is not cheap either, right? And
right
fuel. I mean, I know these aren't like Falcon 9 size, but still, I would imagine a decent sized payload, right?
It's about a metric ton, so 2,200 pounds. Mm-hmm. Pretty darn light. Peter said, like, I think it's an hour and a half flight on the helicopter, like to get out to the rendezvous point, would fly around for a good hour ish, you know, 2 hours, you know, and then an hour and a half back. So it's about four, maybe 5 hours of flight time. And they have an extended, tank for range extension and flight extension on it. And I think he quoted either $6,000 or $10,000 per hour with the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it, you're maybe between 30 to 50, maybe $60,000 or $75,000. To recover a multi-million-dollar piece of hardware, that seems reasonable. To make sense. Yeah, that sounds totally reasonable. So I do think they're onto something. Of course, the splashing down aspect wasn't ideal. Not fully ideal, but I mean, at the same time, they did go through all of the ranges of motion. Now they just have to put all the pieces together next time. And I think they will. I think they'll be able to figure it out. And they seem to be pretty confident that they'll get it solved. And obviously it's all of the things are doable. It's just making sure that they can actually do it reliably and safely over and over, and then make sure it's worth it to keep doing that too, you know, because the ride to buy to launch on Electron is something like, you know, between $5 to $6 million. So it's not like a high cost thing. So of course, at some point it does come down to like, what is their margin on this? How much does it actually cost to do all this? Is it worth it to do it? Even if it breaks even, is it worth it? You know, because by the time they get it back, they still have to do some probably refurbishment, do a handful of things. Peter's made it sound like their biggest reason for wanting to do it was actually to relieve the production, you know, ease production so they don't have to produce as many of these things. That's, I think, their biggest thing, not necessarily trying to save money directly, but saving, you know, money, time, and energy, I guess.
Do you think that they'll be able to reuse this one booster?
I'm guessing when it splashes down, I don't think they'll be reused, but I think they still got what they wanted out of it by being able to examine it and, you know, see like how the heat shield did. We saw that picture that Peter posted with the heat shield. I think there was also a tweet from Rocket Lab that showed the view looking down from the helicopter during their live stream. They had a really good feed actually from the helicopter. Is awesome. It's really impressive.
There's Rocket Lab. That's kind of the economics of it is what will drive it though. Right. I mean, that was, if I remember, I mean, besides a couple tragic accidents, the space shuttle, the problem with it was that it was supposed to be an economic solution, but it didn't turn out to be. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. I mean, it came down to, realistically, it just wasn't necessarily cheaper to do it, but cheaper by really any way you cut it. But space shuttle is hard to really just say that with a blank slate, though. Just like, it wasn't economical because it also did some things that were physically impossible, you know, like be able to repair satellites and launch payloads that were really, really difficult to launch and had down mass capabilities. So, it was a different beast when people just use like the dollar per kilogram, you know, like the payload per pound or whatever, you know, the cost analysis like that. It doesn't quite do it justice. Also, like keeping in mind that it could carry like 7 people relatively comfortably was extremely impressive. So it is a little disingenuous to just say it was like totally not worth, you know, or not to say you were saying that, but like when people say that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the mainstream narrative, right?
Right.
But you're saying there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, and if I remember, it was kind of shut down right in the middle or like a financial crisis. Like we're having... Like economically, there were a lot of like the support when the popularity for the whole program kind of waned.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, obviously some tragic accidents there.
That the second failure with Columbia really was the thing that just kind of made it like, why are we still doing this?
The 1-2 punch. Is this that photo you were talking about here?
Is that just a photo, not a video?
Yeah, that's just a photo on there.
During their live stream, that they had a really surprisingly great feed of a helicopter in the middle of the ocean. It was very impressive, and we're able to actually, you know, bring us this live, and it was fun. It was really cool to watch.
Yeah, that looks like a still shot from the video. I remember seeing it.
Yeah, it was really, really, really fun to watch. So,
is it? Yeah. Can we just talk about the real hero here, which is this like little carabiner and rope that's like a $10 thing you buy at Home Depot holding up this rocket? Like,
they just went to REI before they flew.
Yeah, they're like, hey, where do we get? I don't know. Just go down to the store. We'll get it.
Yeah, it is impressive the loads that I can handle, because obviously you have to think about at some point it's going to be greater than, you know, than a metric ton, because it's going to like, you know, having to.
Well, the drag of it and all that kind of thing.
And just like the quick jerk nature, you know? So, yeah. So,
want to eventually bring it back to land and like just kind of helicopter drop it down onto something on land.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Big foam pit, you know?
Well, I'm sure they've got a big ball pit. Yeah.
Big ball pit.
Big bowl of rice.
That's only if it lands in the water first.
Yeah.
Just put it in some rice and other things. No. I was just kind of wondering how they are going to not damage the engine bells.
Right.
I'm sure they got a plan. I just wonder what it is.
Yeah, no, I do too. That arm that was on the, you know, the robot thing that was on the boat. I wouldn't be surprised if that's articulate enough, or if they can use it like one of those, what are the KUKA robots or whatever? They're like, you know, popular all over like multiple industries that can be so fast and accurate. I'm sure it'd be relatively easy, you know, to like to maybe program it to orient perfectly and smoothly and gently grab onto it, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, the helicopter can just hover there, right? Yeah. Like it'll sway a little bit.
It's on a long rope though, so I would be nervous. It'd be like oscillating and stuff on the rotor wash and all that stuff. So I am curious. I'm excited to learn more about that, and there's a chance I might be able to catch up with Peter again here. I seem to be able to catch up with him almost every 6 months, which is really fun. Because he is awesome. He's one of my favorite people to interview, honestly.
Yeah, he seems like a really good guy. And their headquarters, I remember from your videos, like just really, really cool.
I want to go there just
like
to see
a space headquarters. Like it looks like, oh yeah, they do space things here. Yes. This is like, that wasn't just a movie. That was real.
Exactly. Yep. Super fun. Yeah. So that was the thing that I thought I had a ton of fun watching that and just cheering for them, because that was like so cool, honestly. That was so fun to see that, you know, finally kind of come together and see them catch it before it hit the ground, you know. So
Well, and so it fell off of the helicopter, right?
Yeah, they like full blown like let it rip off. It didn't fall off. They definitely had it secure and were happy with how like they had it, you know, and then the handling characteristics of the helicopter were less than ideal, I guess.
Were there any other space companies that had things fall off this past few weeks?
Not bad, man. Yes. Unfortunately, I don't know what the implications are, and I don't want to blow this out of water, but it's just like the last thing that Boeing's Starliner needs is something like this. they were towing it, just driving from, you know, the integration facility to the launch pad to be integrated onto the rocket, and something just falls off, you know. And granted, that could be something that was intended to be taken off once at the pad.
Yeah, I heard it's just protective covering, so it was gonna be coming off anyway. But
yeah,
is this a video of it falling off? I mean, we have a video.
Yeah, you
here,
see it. Look in the top.
Oh,
right,
there it goes.
Right there. Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Is a Mark Watney in there? What just happened?
It just doesn't inspire confidence in something that's already been riddled with so many problems. That it's just like I just want to have this thing fly. It's supposed to fly here at the end of the month. I just want it to fly and just be able to cheer for it and be like, sweet. You know, yeah, I love the top one. Top comment is Starliner has reached max Q, maximum aerodynamic pressure.
Oh, no. That's it. Max Q for Starliner is like 5 miles an hour.
Is one.
Sadly,
even stop? Were they just keep driving? Like, did anybody even notice that?
Yeah, that's. I think the van, one of those vehicles behind it, did notice. But this is also after they made it to, you know, McDonald's. It looks like there's like a very heavily trafficked area.
Yeah, they were looking for a McDonald's with a working ice cream machine is what happened. That's why it took so long.
Yes, that's why. And of course, you know, they went out on the interstate and minimum speed limit there is 55 mile an hour. And that's what happened.
Oh, man.
Bad news bears, you know.
Maybe yeah. The people who make the McDonald's ice cream machines also made the Starliner protective covering.
That's you've seen the whole conspiracy theory about the
I've
McDonald's
seen
ice cream
video about it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Because the company that repairs them is like also owned by McDonald's, so they're like mm-hmm. always broken because they have this contract they have to fulfill with the maintenance company.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody like created a device that can keep it maintained or something. That
right.
It's like an app or whatever, and they got sued.
Yeah.
For making things better.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh gosh, that's America for you. That's America.
Yeah. Like I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but from time to time, there's
yeah, there's
a conspiracy.
Yeah, there's yeah. I did want to mention real quick one more time on Starliner, just to remind people that forgot. Starliner first flew. What was it? The end of 2020 or end of 2019? Oh gosh.
It all blends.
Was it 2019? I think it was 2019. Yeah, it was 2019.
I think so.
Holy cow.
Almost 3 years.
So yeah, over 2 years. And that was the one where, you know, it the launch looked nice. It rides on top of an Atlas V, a United Launch Alliance Atlas V. It got into orbit. And then immediately as soon as it detached from the Atlas V, it just started like randomly firing its thrusters.
Oh, and right.
Wasted a bunch of its limited propellant, and they ended up having to. It was because the clock thought it was like the clock was off, basically like 90 minutes or something, and thought that it was at a different portion of the mission, so it was starting to do phasing maneuvers that it shouldn't have been trying to do at that point, and it wasted too much propellant to be able to make it to the ISS and back. And then they also had problems right before reentry. They found a line of code that would have potentially made it so when they jettison a thing to like show to get the heat shield exposed. The trunk that would have jettisoned has its own thrusters and could have potentially just shot right back into the heat shield. Like they discovered that like 4 hours before reentry or something in the code. Jeez. It's like, so that's the type of stuff where people were so upset. Like how did these big, huge software flaws? And then they made it out to the pad again in 2021. And then they rolled it all out, got it totally ready for launch. And all of a sudden it had problems with humidity in the valves, and they couldn't get certain valves to open and close, and they had to roll it back, and it was just very confusing. So, yeah.
Why most rockets are like 60 years old? Because basically, hey, it worked, yeah. And we know how it worked.
Yeah.
Like, good. Let's not reinvent this.
Yeah. There is something to that, you know, and that's why I think that's actually honestly why a lot of the industry really doubted SpaceX at first, because they were like, we're going to do more off the shelf parts, vertical integration. We're just going to reinvent all these little things. And people were just like, dude, we've gone through all the, anything you can think of, we've tried.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's like a lot of the, you know, cause during the 50s and 60s when, you know, especially when it was like, these were missiles and these were defense. And this was like a matter of putting every single penny into these programs. Yeah, they tried a lot of stuff. They tried a ton of stuff. So I'm sure they're kind of going like, yeah, good luck trying something you haven't tried. Yeah, yeah, good luck. But, you know, through sheer will and determination, SpaceX definitely is. Yeah.
Yeah. What they were able to do. I mean, the thing that and maybe I'm just, you know, a dad that thinks of it differently. But like the thing that I love about SpaceX and what they've been able to do isn't really any of the tangible things. It's the fact that like kids are excited about space again, you know. Not that they like ever really waned, but like now there is like really cool, like magical kind of unreal things happening. And you're like, that was real. Like, you know, me and Joe were there. We saw, well, and you were there too, Tim, but we saw the Falcon Heavy boosters come down in real life, like just mind blowing stuff where you're like, when I was a kid, I mean, I guess we had the space shuttle was our thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's cool. It's a bigger effect, I think, personally, a societal kind of impact, which then will lead to the next generation of kids that want to do this stuff and come up with the next version of this, you know?
Yep, exactly.
I can't tell you how many comments or emails I've gotten from people that, you know, because of SpaceX, we're like, oh my God, I want to do this. And we started studying that in college or whatever. And, it's having a real effect in the world. It's more intangible, like you said. You can't really measure it, but I think that over time it adds up.
I can't tell you how many people are like that. That email or will run into me, you know, in real life or something, and be like, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I didn't care about any of this, and now I'm an aerospace engineer, or now I work for SpaceX, and they're just so excited, and there's just so much stuff going on. So.
I mean, even your story, Tim, is kind of like that, right? I mean, you were doing photography and stuff like that and just like got into it and just kept getting deeper and deeper. And now you're like a legit science communicator.
Coming out.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a news van. I mean, how more official
van? I am official now. I'm excited to pull up to Kennedy Space Center for the first time in that thing. Cause I think, you know, there's like the right lane and the left lane. And I have a feeling we're going to get into that right lane once we pull up at the
put the meatball logo on the outside or something like that. But don't have it say NASA. Have it say like Everyday Astronaut or something, but with the NASA logo.
Exactly.
You pull up and they don't let you in. You're just like, oh, yeah. And you hit the button and the thing goes.
Exactly.
I love it.
Well, on that note, I know we always start off with like just a crap ton of me talking for way too long. But
that's why we're here, Tim.
But so SpaceX this year, by the way, speaking of the steamroller effect and stuff, SpaceX has already launched. They're exactly on track with launching once a week all year long. And that is absolutely insane. I'm trying to find the actual, this is not working for me, but yeah, they are officially at once a week. Which is crazy. So, there we go.
They've got, what does it show, 13 so far in 2022?
Yeah, and I think actually that one might need to be updated. I think they launched one more time this morning, technically, which is 14. Already this year. And we're what, first week of May? That's insane.
That's pretty good.
Absolutely. Pam Polak is saying 18. Is 18 right? 18's a lot.
This was to release date as of March. The date.
SpaceX. Holy cow! Yeah, I think it is.
There you go.
Actually, I was sitting here in my head. I was like, "Is that 13 weeks into the year? May what?"
So, right. 17 times total, according to this chart here on what website? We'll give these guys credit. SpacexStats.xyz.
He's pulling it from your site.
Yeah, my site's saying 18.
Is this what?
Like, your site, Tim.
No, in Discord.
Is this your site, Tim?
That one might need to be updated because this just happened. Like another one was this morning. So I think 18 is right.
Okay. Well, this show's 17. So,
yeah. So, 18. Okay. Regardless, basically once a week. I mean, they're doing it and that's crazy. So,
Are they still going to do the thing where it like lands and just refuels and goes again, like same day? Like what's the turnaround time? Wasn't that the idea a while ago?
I think that was a topic we had once was like, you know, Elon announced they're going to try to do a 24-hour turnaround with the Falcon 9. And basically what it comes out, they're starting to do these short ones. The other day they did a 21-day turnaround, which is of a single booster. That's quite short. And they're talking about
compressing. I was wondering what the record was.
Yep, I think 21 is currently the record. And they're talking about pushing that even more, just kind of now that they're like, whatever. They're like, who cares, you know?
If they're launching their own Starlinks, it's like, at least it's not, you know, a customer's payload or something.
Exactly, exactly. So they
the risk is theirs.
Yep, yep. And so they're working on, I think, decreasing it and kind of pushing that a little bit more. But I don't think with Falcon 9, Elon said it's not the correct architecture to be able to launch, you know, once a day or to do a 24-hour turnaround or even a 48-hour turnaround. I think it's more like they might get it down to like a week or 10 days someday. But
Yeah.
Still fun. Still cool.
Awesome.
Considering the space shuttle was like, I think the quickest turnaround ever was space shuttle was like 45 or 60 days or something. Like it was.
Yeah.
And that was fast. But
I mean,
getting down to 21 days.
With people on board, though, you're going to probably take more time.
You know? Yeah, you don't want to rush that one. And they already, and we have three boosters that have flown 12 times already. Three of their boosters in their fleet have flown 12 times.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy. Amazing.
Well, speaking of turnaround time, Joe, I think there's some improvements in the turnaround time of breaking down plastic that you wanted to talk about or that someone wanted you to talk about.
Somebody wanted me to talk about. Luckily, I spent a whole 10 minutes perusing this this article. So I don't know if this... Okay. How about I just talk about it? So scientists discover a method to break down plastic in days, not centuries. So this is something that... I've been sent stuff about this for a while for various things, and I don't know right offhand if this is like some kind of record-breaking thing or what like it normally takes with... using enzymes to break down plastics and stuff. I will say the thing that I found interesting in this was that because I'm reading through it and it's like, okay, so they have these enzymes that break down plastic. Well, that's fine, but it's still something that's going to cost money. So there still has to be some economic incentive for people to go through this. And then you get down to the bottom of this article and it says, I'll just read it. How about I just read it? If I can find it. I can't find it. It breaks down the plastic into like the polymers into its original monomers, mm-hmm. like the original stuff that they made it with, so that they can take those monomers. Okay, here we go. It does this through a process called depolymerization, in which a catalyst separates the building blocks that make up the PET, that's a type of plastic, into their original monomers, which can then be repolymerized, built back into virgin plastic, and converted into other products. So the big problem with plastic recycling is that you can only do it a handful of times, before it becomes so, before it just falls apart, you know, and it's not usable. Well, let's say it falls apart, breaks down into microplastics that get in your bloodstream, which is always good stuff. So, but the idea with this is that it actually breaks it down into the original, you know, stuff, and then they can like remake it into actually virgin plastic. So it can be done over and over and over again.
That's,
in theory, and this is what's being done in the lab.
That's really important. The plastic pollution thing is one of those. That's definitely one of the, you know, we talked about this, I think, last time we got together, where we're like, what are the things we're going to be looking back on? Or maybe it wasn't, maybe it was a conversation where it's like, what are the things that were like so barbaric in our use of plastics is definitely going to be like, can you believe they just use plastic everywhere and like got all over the ocean and all over everything?
Yeah. Well, plastic was sort of like a wonder material in the early days, right? Because it was a byproduct, if I remember, of refining oil. Yeah. So, it was like I'll probably get it wrong, but it was like Rockefeller or somebody like that long ago, where they're like, we need to do something with all this waste, and then like some scientists figured out how to make plastic with it, right? And that's like how it came to be. And then now it's almost impossible to think of a world without it.
Oh, right.
Like everything, you know, my microphone, my headphones, like no, everything.
Everybody listening. Yeah. Everybody, wherever you're listening to this, look around you.
Yeah.
And look at how much plastic stuff it is.
Look at the thing you're looking at this on.
Right. Exactly. That will never break down. All of this stuff you're looking at right now, it will never break down.
That's gross.
Not fully.
That's gross. That
it
sucks.
Is forever.
and the biggest bummer of the whole thing was that the whole concept of recycling plastic is a scam and was created by this industry to trick us into thinking it was okay to keep buying and consuming plastic. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the bummer of the whole thing. So, but hopefully something like this maybe could change that equation, whether it be actually making recycling like economically viable or just, hey, you have to do this, you know, like you make X amount of plastic, you must, you know, break down X amount of plastic in return for that to try to balance it out. I don't know.
Well, the thing about plastic that's so wonderful is the same thing that makes it so devastating is that it's so cheap to make. There's no recycling process, whatever, even if this is a perfect process that just got discovered here. I mean, it's not going to be as cheap as just making virgin plastic.
Right.
It's just the cheapest thing in the world. And so that's what made it so popular. And everybody's like, oh, you can just make a plastic bag and just throw it away. And it's, you know, it's nothing. Yeah. And it costs like a fraction of a penny to make it. Well, but that's the problem, though, is like there's absolutely no incentive to recycle it or reuse it, you know.
I actually, on that note, I wonder if like theoretically, what would happen if our oil consumption did reduce to like 10% of what it is now? Would that, I wonder like how
like it went down
together.
10% down
90%. Like if we were started, you know, in 15 years, if the world all of a sudden was using 1/10 the amount of oil that we use today, just making it some made up numbers, do you think it's proportional? Like, do you think all of a sudden then plastic would become more expensive to make and produce and they'd be looking for alternate solutions to make it? Or do you think it's like there's such an abundance of the leftover stuff that they're just like, oh, we have this for 600 decades or something, you know, like.
Yeah, I would lean on that. I would venture a guess that it wouldn't change much in terms of how much it costs to make plastic.
There were not like a one-to-one production of our needs for oil and our production of plastics aren't like perfectly in line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around actually reducing our oil or oil consumption by that much. I just don't.
Well, at some point we won't have a choice because there's the only limited supply of it on the planet. You know, I mean, it may be far out in the future, but
I'll give you that.
Eventually we're going to have to leave. Yeah. I really wonder how much in like 200 years or so people would look back and just see what we're living in right now is this insane bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where like petroleum production and like all these things, like just kind of like flew through the roof. And then it was like, oh yeah, we can't do that forever. And we finally pull our heads out of it. But everything about what we're living through is so abnormal in every way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but I have a little hope. If you look at things like, you know, Norway or some of these countries that are all of a sudden, you know, getting really like they're reducing their oil consumption like crazy. That trend, you know, not necessarily saying they're, you know, there now or anything, but that trend is in the right direction and does point to a period where we could actually be like, oh, yeah, they are actually using 1/10 the amount of oil they were, you know, X amount of time ago. So that's cool.
Did you do you follow Wendover Productions, that channel?
Yeah.
He had a video at some point this week. I've been so busy this week, I've barely even gotten on YouTube, but I like, you know, got on there for a minute last night and I saw his video. He was basically making the argument about why oil prices and gas prices have gone through the roof right now. And it's pretty long and complicated, but he's kind of making the argument that this is petroleum's last gasp. And, you know, now that the cost of renewables is actually getting down low enough to where it's kind of competitive or cheaper economically than oil. Anyway, I'm sure there's a counter argument to it, but I found it to be an interesting point that he was making there.
Yeah.
Well, for this stuff, I always like looking at the trends again. You're like, which direction is it trending? And oil by all measurement is going to not be cheaper to produce someday. Like it's probably plateaued. It might someday, you know, who knows? It might have some big reserve somewhere and be like, whoa, we have enough oil, blah, blah, blah. It'll be way cheap or something. But it's not likely just like continually declining in price. And that's exactly what renewables are doing, you know?
Yeah, I think that the thing there that sticks out is the price, and this is kind of what, I don't know the guy's name, but the Wendover production guy, I think the point he was trying to make, and I think is a point like a lot of people have thought of, is the price that you pay of gasoline at the pump is not super correlated with how much oil there actually is or how much it costs to even make a gallon of gasoline. Like these things are so much based on economics, like macroeconomic trends.
Futures and stuff,
Yeah, like oil futures. Because there was that thing, and he, I watched some of that video, where at some point, the price of a barrel of oil was actually negative.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like...
And so a lot of this is a reaction to that.
Right, right. It bounced back. But it's one of those things. So I brought up a chart here, and it's not about oil, but it's related. It's total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. And to talk positive about stuff, I mean, if you look at the trend the past several years, even like since 2006 is kind of where we had a peak, it's been a really steady decline and a very sharp decline. Now, 2020, greenhouse gases, you know, there was kind of a reason for no one's traveling and things like that. So, but the overall trend is definitely down. And this is in the U.S., which is great because we are one of the worst polluters in the world. So if you think about that, I mean... It's good. Like things are heading in the right direction. You know, this is like always the Gates Foundation paper that everyone gets sponsored by, except me, about you know, the world is actually doing much better than I think the media generally portrays. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it, like if it bleeds, it leads, right? Because negative things are much more clicky than positive things. But yeah, I mean, so if the general demand for oil is going down, I think is what you're saying, Tim, will the price of plastic, of making plastic, go up so much so that it makes a difference, right? Is that the thesis?
Yeah. The hypothesis. I don't know about a thesis.
Well,
hypothesis.
A hypothesis.
Hypothesis. Yeah.
I never realized that until this right
is
now.
Is that where that comes from?
I would assume. And like not a, what's hypo mean in Latin? Like what's...
If you're a hypochondriac...
See,
I know that hyper and hypo mean different things.
I always just said thesis as in hypothesis, as like short for that for me.
Ooh. But I think that makes sense. If hyper goes up, then hypo would go down. It's like a lesser thesis.
Right. Mm.
I'm going to start offering hyperthesis.
You guys would know better than me, but a theory, if I understand the correct science, like science educator term, a theory is something that's actually been proven. Like mathematically, there's a proof for it, but we say
it's
theory,
repeatable.
Right? Because like Isaac Newton's laws and, you know, Einstein's theories, like Einstein disproved some of Isaac Newton's things or something like that. So it was a theory because we always leave the door open to being proven wrong versus like this is fact or something, right?
It's basically like it's only wrong in the sense it's only fact in the sense that no one's ever figured out how it could be wrong.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's a theory always, right? Like the theory of relativity is a theory.
And gravity.
Yeah, right. It's gravity. A theory because eventually we'll figure out a giant flying spaghetti monster is really to blame for all the laws of physics, right?
And his noodly appendage.
And his holy spaghetti head. What's that?
Yeah,
what's
where's that? My colander?
Colander, yes.
That was so good. that's a good question about making that stuff and whether or not it will be more expensive. I think just the if we need just alternatives to plastic, like it's impossible, like it's really hard, but I think that's where my money would go if I were a multi-billionaire being able to fund things, you know. That and and making batteries. I would put money towards making batteries. What do you guys think about that?
I would too. I wish there was a what? I wish I had water.
Manny pulled it up fast.
Look at that.
We need to start having like someone that just is always drinking water during these transitions. I'm like, U.S. Department of Energy announces $3 billion towards EV battery manufacturing supply chain.
What?
That would be a great like gimmick in a talk show. Just have like one guy like that is his whole job is to be Mr. Spit Take.
He's off in a different room so it doesn't make everything a mess. And literally they just cut to him like whenever they.
Yeah. He's just in there drinking water. A light turns on and he does it. And that's it. That's his whole existence. Like he doesn't even know what he does. He just like comes into this building and sits there.
Probably doing it at home on Zoom. You know, if you think about how many people like on our sidekicks on side like on talk shows that have literally nothing to do. So that's pretty good.
So this is comes to us from our friends at Electrek on May 2nd. about the U.S. Department of Energy announcing a $3.1 billion fund from the infrastructure bill from old President Biden there, Grandpa Joe, as I like to call him.
Grandpa Joe?
I had a grandpa named Joe that looked exactly like him. That's just why. Anyway, so it's not just like some weird reference. That's anyways. So they're talking about battery recycling, and they're talking about expanding lithium production, and they're talking about electric vehicle battery second life applications. So this is all kind of very good. I just posted a video covering kind of this exact, it's funny. It's like, I think I posted the video and of course, 5 minutes later, this article drops as it happens because as it turns out, like, you know, maybe I'm just nervous for things, but like EV movement's been going so strong. We're hitting like 5% of new car sales ish, depending on how you slice it. And if you include plugins and things, it's like things are going really well for the EV movement right now, but we're heading into this kind of shortage of materials, like raw materials at the start, and then battery production as well is also being constrained. And it's not really just EVs, obviously, that are the consumers of these things, right? Like it's our smartphones, everything. It's our laptops, it's literally power tools, medical devices, like literally everything takes basically the same kinds of batteries, which we've, you know, now proven to be our current best energy, most energy dense kind of technology we can make. So with that, with the demand for everything going up, I mean, that means prices are going up. This is where like Rivian, you know, had the whole price hike fiasco. And then, you know, Tesla's actually been able to hedge a lot of this because they smartly started investing heavily in this very early on. And I just saw that they signed another big deal for nickel supply, which is another thing. So things are going, you know, but like we're heading into territory here where the demand for EVs is becoming so big that it is going to really put a constraint on this. Plus, you have like another lockdown in China. The Tesla factory was shut down for some period of time. I don't know, a few weeks or something like that. But so, you know, we're trotting along. We're looking at, EVs are going like it. Tesla's, you know, crushing it, and all the other automakers are coming on board, and like EVs everywhere. And anyone in the auto space, that's all that's interesting is electric stuff. But it's like, we also like need a gazillion more batteries. So it's exciting to see that in the US we're doing this. The research I did on my video showed that 80% of the battery grade materials for that are being made are controlled by China. And, you know, politics, geopolitics can play a role in that. Plus, Biden has not changed the tariffs that Trump put in place with China. If you remember, that was like our trade war was the term people were using. So, you know, if we're in a trade war and you're not playing nice and we own 80% of the materials you need to make those things, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So, I was wondering if that tariff is ever going to go away, because I feel like Chinese cars would just flood the market.
They absolutely
Chinese
would.
EVs especially.
Yeah. NIO comes to mind. I mean, they've got they've got a $25,000 vehicle that goes 400 miles on a charge.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now when you import, now the irony is I'm like, who cares? Import that. If it costs triple the price, 75 grand, it still is compelling. That's still a compelling vehicle. You know, I think it's more so like the whole, cause if you remember, like Huawei, who makes phones and other smart products from China, got banned.
It looks like Huawei. It looks like. Have you ever noticed that? Like, just so people know what we're talking about.
I think it's called Huawei. There's so many. By the way, I just learned this. It's called Rematz. It's not called Rimac.
The
hypercar company that makes the Nevera, which is like the most insane vehicle ever made.
From Sweden.
Rematz. Israel, I believe. Right?
Oh, okay.
Or Croatia or something like that.
And nobody can agree on how to say Hyundai.
Oh, it's a Funday and a Hyundai.
Funday and Hyundai.
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 Yeah. Wow.
Hyundai.
Yeah.
Especially the British guys, the fully charged guys, and
Hyundai.
It's like they all say it differently.
Yeah.
Like, don't the commercials tell you? Like,
well, is it Tesla or Tesla?
It's Tesla, right? Ben.
Sorry. It must be I was born in Tejas, and so, you know, I say things weird and stuff. Y'all'd have wanted to create a new rule for me.
Can't. Yaldav came.
Yaldav not said Texas if you were from here.
Yeah.
Or Tejas.
Hey, I was from Southern Texas. Okay.
Hey, we real say. Quick, speaking of Hyundais and Kias and other cars that are EVs and stuff, producer Andrew, my producer, we just spent the last week, you know, working in the van here, and he's looking at replacing his Volt, not a Bolt, but he really wants to go full EV for his next car. He's still obviously quite enticed by Tesla, would love to own a Tesla. Obviously the hilarious price for full self-driving to be able to do like navigate on autopilot and stuff like that. And just auto lane change is keeping him from too heavily considering a Tesla at this point. And then also just like the fact that you're not going to get one this year really is another thing.
That's really,
What else would you, you really like the EV6, right? Ben and Joe, have you been in any other EVs?
I haven't been in the EV6. It looks nice.
Yeah.
So the top three EVs right now, I would say for most people, right? Because there's specialty ones and things like that. Like I'm sorry, a Porsche Taycan Turbo S is amazing, but of course you can't really recommend that. Oh, there goes my camera. I probably didn't plug it in again. Anyways, I'll keep talking.
You don't have a Taycan camera.
Yeah, that's it. So see, Porsche put a thing in my office that just cut my feed. EV6 is incredible. It's very tech, I would say. So it has lots of cool tech features. The Mach-E is also really good. I think the interior, it's really comfortable. It's like less tech, but drives way better. Like that's in that space. That's like my favorite driving one outside of maybe Model Y Performance. I would say it's probably a bit better, but like Ford knows how to make good driving cars. But you have to buy the high-end Mach-E because the lower-end ones are not good and the materials are not good. So like high-end Mach-E is great. EV6 is great. The Ioniq 5 is basically the EV6, but looks super weird. So I wouldn't, personally, I look at it, I'm like, no, this isn't me.
Right.
Oh, no, I kind of like it. I kind of like the digital, the square pixelation of the lights
that's,
and stuff. I
think that's because we grew up in the 80s and 90s, right? But honestly, though, I look at it and I go... Yeah, so I think EV6 and Mach-E are the best two outside of the Tesla Model Y. Tesla Model Y is probably still the best, but getting it and price and other things, like I think those are the top three.
What about, have you been in a Polestar? I forget.
Yeah, thumbs down. Yeah, I have two thumbs down. You can't see me, but I have two thumbs down. Yeah, I mean, it's a beautifully designed car, and everything else I know about it is not good. The range, the price is actually reasonable.
Yeah, I don't like the range, but I like the design of it.
It looks beautiful. It looks so good.
Yes. Yeah. And you can get it. Like you can buy it today and get it.
Have you done the 3 Series, BMW 3 Series EV yet?
The iX or the i4?
I thought it was maybe i4. Yeah.
No, I haven't done either of those yet, but it's BMW and they make good, you know. So. Yeah. I'm sure it's a great car. The question is how it just price and availability, honestly, in range.
Yeah.
Price so is this like a retrofitted model or 3 Series?
Not sort
model,
of. Three.
It's an awful lot like it's on the same platform as the 3 and correct. 4 Series. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a ground up BEV, as they'd say, but I think they did that intentionally because they wanted to look and feel like their other cars, which is what they should have done from day one instead of making the i3, but that's my opinion. So, and the i7 actually looks incredible. I haven't had a chance to see that, but I don't know if you saw that. That's like, okay, if you want luxury EV, it doesn't get more luxury. I guess maybe EQS, but like it has a 31-inch widescreen thing that pops down from the roof.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's so nuts.
Wait, which one is this?
The i7, BMW i7.
It's like there's 7 series, but electric.
Because the deal, really, like when you think luxury cars, the truth is what you want is a comfortable back seat. That's what a true luxury car is. It's a big, spacious back seat with really nice materials and low vibrations and low sound, low noise. So an S-Class is how you define it, right? So like we think of luxury as like a Model S. And it's like Model S is such a driver's car. It's not like what you think of when you think of luxury if you're like coming from the auto world, you know what I mean?
Right. And a rich person with a driver. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't like self-driving. I have his name is Charles, and he drives me wherever I want to go. Like, I've had this my whole life. Like, if you're just some, you know, rich bastard, that's like, that's your reality, you know?
How does that work? If you have a professional driver, like, do you have to have, do you normally have two and they go on like 12-hour shifts and they just, or like three and one's all on demand all weekend or something? Like, how does that work? What if you, what, when do they have a life outside of just like being ready for your beckoning call?
Well, I think just like a car, if you're not in it, they're parked. So,
but they just
when,
have to sit
when
there
they're not, when they're not out. Actually driving you, they can just do whatever they want. And,
but then what if you're like,
that's when they sleep.
It just sounds, how does that work? Like,
yeah.
Imagine being like, hey, actually I need to go somewhere. And then like, they were about to leave, you know, like go hang out with their family.
But, well, they usually, know. Well, I don't know. So like, I have a friend with some really rich parents and they have a driver, and yeah, he just kind of like lives with him. It's just kind of like how it is. Like, he doesn't have a life. His life is just being their driver. You know,
do they put the staff downstairs or up in the attic?
They have their own separate house. I'm not kidding.
When we were, like, when we were in Salem,
and it's like a 3,000 square foot, like way better than nice houses house we live in.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Sweet. Good gig.
So they're doing okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is kind of the funny thing. And actually, BMW had some pretty snarky, I mean, they were really kind of throwing, they were throwing some shade on Tesla and stuff, especially in terms of what a luxury vehicle is. And, you know, I mean, I don't think that, like, I think there's some truth to what they were saying, that like, when people think of luxury cars, they don't think about 0 to 60 times. It's not like something they care about. You know, they care about how comfortable is that seat that I'm going to be sitting in while someone drives me.
Yeah.
Well, I've never had anything approaching a luxury car in my life. Like, I got the Model 3. It's a nice car. I had a Volkswagen Jetta, which was a nice car, but it's not like a luxury car with like everything cushy and, you know, like, I'm looking at the pictures, the 7 Series here, and I'm like, yeah, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
So like, when I think about what my next car might be, I think that's the direction I would want to go in more than performance or than all the other stuff. It's kind of like, I just kind of would like a fancy car for once in my life, you know? I could have a heart attack next week and never have a fancy car.
We just found out that Joe got old. He wants the low and slow.
Hey, well, you know, I ride dirty.
Well, you know, there's that screen. Yeah. You know what they say, though?
Oh,
you know,
oh, wow.
If you're important, people will wait. So, you know, you don't need to worry about it. Yeah. I mean, this is what we're seeing on the screen here is a guy sitting in the back of this seat, this car with this 31 inch widescreen thing. I mean, this is what people really want. If you're really into luxury stuff.
Oh, that ceiling.
Yeah. It has this, the little lights there. The coolest glass roof I've ever seen was in the, Porsche Taycan, GTS that I drove, and it had a, like, it could go opaque.
Yes.
Right?
So yeah.
There was like a setting, and you could have it do auto, or you could just set it yourself. Because I remember sitting at a stoplight, we were out in the desert, and I looked up and I'm like, I can look directly at the sun, and it's like not a, like, I don't, and I'm like, what is even going on here? And it was the whole, it like, you know, caught that the sun was right there and like bink, like made it almost completely blacked out. I'm like, that's cool.
One thing I wish Tesla roofs had, because I really like the glass roof, but like, it's not clear enough, you know, it's not low enough opacity during like, you know, day, or especially at night, like trying to see stars or something.
Yeah.
It's way too dark for that. So it would be cool if they could do that, you know, electric thing that's auto fades like a Boeing 787 window or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's super cool.
That's kind of the funny thing, right? Like Tesla really changed the game, I think. And I love what they've done with the whole first principles thing. Like, I still, if I ever get in a car that's not a Tesla, I will leave it running and unlocked and just all walk. Because, you know, it's so many things that they did. It's like, yes, everybody should copy this. But then these other car companies, I mean, they have like some next level stuff, right? Like things that it's just your preference at this point, which is really cool. I think that as an EV fan, that's kind of the cool thing. Like, if you really want a luxury car, and you're not thinking like, ooh, I need it to play YouTube or something. Like if you want to sit in the back, like there is a car for you, right? If you want to drive an insane performance, you can take it to the track and like blow people's doors off. There's a car for you. Like there's so many good options now. It's really awesome. You know, the only segment that is really still missing in my mind is the lower end, more economical version. You know, I still am clamoring for like the Honda Civic EV. Mm-hmm. Right. That's like $17,000 and has like pump windows and whatever. Yeah. But it's so cheap to operate that it just people will kind of be forced to get it. Right. Like why it wouldn't make sense to buy a gas version of this. It's way too expensive. And I'm afraid, especially with the supply constraints and other things coming up, that is still, you know, pretty far out.
Yeah. And on that note, too, like I still think like, you know, last mile transit vans, too. I cannot believe that we still are running around with gas versions of those. Yeah. You know, with the USPS, United States Postal Service, purchasing like 90% gas, not even a hybrid. Like that is the vehicle that should be at least hybrid or easily could be serviceable by a fully electric. It's just like, how did?
I mean, it's kind of happening, right? I mean, I think they have a contract with Stellantis to buy a bunch of them and to make them and buy them. And then, of course, Rivian is making the Amazon delivery vans, which apparently is part of the reason why it's been taking so long to get a Rivian is because they've been so
prioritizing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because they kind of have. Yeah.
It's a big order.
It's a big order.
Well, and hey, I'm all for it, but give me my damn truck already. You know?
Yeah. Hey, speaking of trucks, just real quick.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't. Did you see Marquez's video with that like 1978 truck that they converted?
Yeah, the old Ford 100 old Ford. Or whatever it was. Yeah.
F-100, I believe.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. I'll take a look at that.
Can I share this?
Oh, do you need... If you send me the link, I can post it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, here, I'll do that.
I know which one it is.
We are so old. Just kidding. Nah, I'm making fun of it.
But why?
Can I share that one? Just kidding.
How do you kids do that? Which button is it?
Yeah, because they debuted this at SEMA. Yeah, here you go. I got it. All right. Ding, 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 ding.
Let me see it.
Yeah, it's
pretty cool. We could actually mark this clip in River and be like, remember that time, that bit where we were slow. Oh, that is cool already.
Yep.
I love a good electric conversion.
What I like about it is that it is like all the, like the window is manual and like all the original stuff in there. Like there's something tactile in about manual stuff like that. And it just kind of like, I don't know. It throws me back to when I was a kid and some of the stuff that was around then.
I think that's going to be a new commodity almost. Like, I think there's a lot of demand coming up and already happening for like just high craftsmanship, you know, things that are handmade or low run produced and that is more analog stuff like that. Like, I think the car company Singer, I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but they reproduce like 1970s Porsches. From scratch. Look up Singer Motors, Singer Motors, Ben. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are like extremely like, $500,000 or $1 million cars. And they're exquisitely made though. Like it's like just absolutely stunning. Yeah. And
I want to know all the gauges so
and stuff are. Oh, it's incredible. And like, I think there's a demand for this type of stuff more and more as we get more and more digital. There's going to be more and more demand for things that are just really, really high end and require some craftsmanship, you know?
1,000% agree. I mean, I have a watch on right now, which you'll notice is not a smartwatch. And the reason is because I love the craftsmanship of it. I love I didn't include it in the video, but I did the Model S versus the Porsche Taycan video. And that was kind of the comparison I was making. You know, the Model S is an incredible vehicle. It's a computer on wheels. It's like an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
The Porsche Taycan is not that. It does, you can get in it and go to work and back. Yes. But it is a very different highly crafted machine that is meant to give you this experience of being connected in your driving. It's more like like a Rolex or like a fine, like a good, you know, piece, a beautiful watch. It's not meant to be an Apple Watch, right? And I think you're right. The good news is that it's people's preference. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like the Apple Watch is probably better for most people. But some of us, depending on what you're doing, may want something a little bit more custom or more, I don't know, curated, I guess is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. You know what gets me is like there's communities and like deep interest on very specific things like watches, you know? There's a group of friends that I have. Sometimes I feel like I just missed the meeting or something. Like they're all into, at a very deep level, these very specific things, and they all know about it. And I'm just sitting there like, what's going on?
When did you guys...
really?
When did you guys come up with... Wait, like, a minute.
They were talking about watch. They were talking about this one specific brand of watch, and I don't even remember what it was now. But they were just like going into like all the things. Oh well, this one was made in Italy with the thing and the watch handle came from this certain type of rock from the Caucasus Mountains. I mean, just like getting all like super deep into this one brand of watch, and I'm just sitting there like, I know what time it is.
Well, it's so many things, right? Like I think this is what makes a lot of things special. Like wine is very much the same way.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Like the special thing about wine isn't so much how it tastes. It's the story behind how it came to be, right? If you just want to get drunk, that's one thing, you know? Same with like any kind of fine spirit or whatever, even craft beers, you know? I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's just me or where I live, but there's been such a renaissance of like caring about what you consume, caring about these other things in a deeper way than just what it gives, what it does for you.
At the end of the day. Know? And my parents, I feel like, are kind of almost in a very not like, I guess hipster way would be the best way to describe it about it at all. They are like, if someone recommends something to them, it is gospel. It could be a stranger they just met 6 seconds ago. They're like, oh, have you guys tried Joe's Crab Shack over here? They have wonderful blah blah. Like, no, we met the nicest guy and he told us all about this place called Joe's Crab Shack, and it was, you know, it's like, that's it, you know, just that human connection to it. And it's great.
You know, hashtag influenced.
Exactly. But, you know, it's like, why don't they just you know, try out their own restaurants and form their own opinions?
Bum 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 ba da.
Yeah,
why don't they just
remember that horrible song I wrote for it?
Oh God! Thank God that's.
Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do that?
All like right, robots. So I'm looking through. Why don't they just now? Did any stand out to you, Tim? Or I found one here that I guess is interesting to me.
I'm not gonna lie, I didn't know
we had a bunch of them.
I didn't know we were doing Why Don't They Just. So they all stood out to me, and the fact that we're doing it.
Why don't they put GPS on LEO satellites so they have better tracking?
Or
I mean, do they do that?
they don't need GPS because GPS is literally just like triangulated signals, you know, like using the radio waves, and you can just do that with ground stations and satellites anyway. Satellites like can be triangulated to the same degree of accuracy as GPS, but sometimes I think in the future, honestly, there will be a way to do that a little bit better with certain satellites, you know, like. You know, I think there will be because there are like dead spots where a satellite, you know, something could happen like, well, we have to wait a full orbit to actually know, did it get hit or, you know, or whatever before it's over a ground tracking station again. So there could be something like that where they, you know, are in constant communication with something to, and more accurately position. Yeah, that's a good question.
All right.
Did anyone else have anything to add to that? Sorry, I just ate it. I just took it and just.
No. So are GPS satellites usually geostationary?
No, they're medium Earth orbit.
Okay. Okay.
So they circle the Earth twice a day.
MEO.
Exactly, instead of once. That's what it is. Yeah. Instead of once a day like geo.
Oh. Yeah.
And I don't quite get how it works, but it is something where like you would think they would need to be totally stationary, but it's.
That's what I assume. Yeah.
I gotta learn how they work really well and incorporate that into a video about you know, orbits and stuff.
Why don't they just make all gas stations add at least one electric car charger?
I was just looking at that one. I don't know that they have to make it happen, but I think they will want to do that eventually.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know,
we were just talking, Andrew and I were just talking about that yesterday. We were driving by a gas station. He's like, man, why don't all these gas stations just have some electric chargers?
And it's
They probably
will. Here's the deal though. Like, I see things like Buc-ee's here in Texas, like the big giant convenience stores with the restaurants inside.
Basically, and Walmart, and the parking lot is all gas pumps. And I'm dead serious. It's pretty
You're right. There's no electric chargers there. And I'm like, how of all the places where you could actually spend some time in here, it's not just some like corner, you know, gas station. You could actually spend time in here while your car's charging.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't stopped at one in a while because they don't have any electric chargers.
Superchargers, Tesla did it partnered with Buc-ee's actually.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I think one of the first ones is coming online really soon. So it's funny
good.
To say that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's
that makes sense.
Perfect one. Yes.
Yeah.
The one thing about is the only response I have to this is like that and Joe, you've said it beautifully before, that we have to change our way of thinking about charging because gas cars and electric cars just fundamentally don't work the same. Like, I would argue, in maybe I'm just being snarky or whatever, that every gas station out there likely has electricity and therefore does have electric charging stations in it, right? Like, there is a plug somewhere I could plug into if I needed to, right? I mean, look at what Ewan McGregor did on The Long Way Up, where they drove these motorcycles through Patagonia and like places where there literally could not be more remote, and they still were able to find people's houses to charge at and whatever. So like, we have infrastructure. It exists. It's called the electricity grid. But if we want fast chargers, that's a different story. And we don't need them nearly as much as we do gas stations, right? Because you can't fill up gas at your house, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Maybe down in Texas you can do that, but most places you can't do that, right?
On the farms, yeah. My grandparents had a giant like gas thing that they would
biodiesel or something. Yeah. So I just think we have to change our thinking about it. You certainly don't need them nearly as much, but absolutely. And there is an infrastructure bill, or part of the infrastructure bill is to have something. I think 500,000 charging stations out there. I don't know. One thing I'll just say on this is that when I started reviewing all non-Teslas, I have to go take them to charge places, right? And so I've spent a lot of time now at Electrify America, at EVgo, at ChargePoint, and at all these other ones. It is not nearly as bad as I thought as it was going to be. Like, superchargers are still cream of the crop, but where I live, there are actually more. If you were to combine EVgo, which has fast charging, Electrify America, and ChargePoint DC fast charging or whatever, there are more stations, like twice as many stations just about for that as then there are Tesla superchargers. Now, at the superchargers, like we have one by my house, it has like 48 stalls. It's stupid. It's like it's gigantic. So yes, but my point being that if you're traveling and you need a place to charge, if you combine, like, it's actually not nearly as bad as I think some people online make it out to be. And that was my perception before, was like, it's awful. But after having done it, and I go on trips, I go to LA, I go to Phoenix with these cars that aren't Teslas. And I'm like, it's actually like, other than every now and then you're like, this one, why isn't this working? Ah, other than like that experience, which happens, it's not nearly as bad as I think people make it out to be.
Good.
That's good.
It's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yep. Something that I keep saying, and I have seen in some, I think it was one of the Transport Evolves videos. They just had like a clip of it. And I think this was in England, but the UK. I used England and Britain interchangeably in a TMI video, and
how
people got
you.
Mad. I know. How dare I? But no, the idea of just putting chargers on light poles.
Right.
At street lights and stuff. Like every grocery store has like street lights in the parking lot. Like, why not put little chargers on there? And it might be level 2, but if you're going to be inside for 30 minutes or an hour doing your shopping or whatever, however long it takes, but you get a little something out of it. Obviously at any office parks or parking garages and stuff, it's a perfect place for it, and malls and whatnot. I just kind of feel like the paradigm shift with with electric is that it kind of comes to you. You don't go to it. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you
because
just
it
put
is
it
everywhere already.
Yeah. 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 Like we have something like 10 billion electric outlets in the US, right? So
yeah,
you know, lots of opportunity. Yep.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Well, what are you guys working on while we wrap?
Joe.
I'm working on watching your new video.
Oh, it's a longie.
It's a long one, and I like I said, I've barely even been on YouTube this week, so I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I need to carve out some time.
Oh, let me know what you think. It's we get deep.
You always do.
Yeah, always do. Yeah. Yeah, that's but awesome. What's your next what next video are you working on?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You talking to me? I got a couple of fun ones on the way, actually. Monday's video is about a guy, he's in England, who lost his memory. He lost his memory, and he lost his ability to form new memories. So he kind of just lives in a 10-second loop.
Mm, yeah. That's
10 so seconds. Scary. Wow. I've heard this story before, yeah. I think.
Yeah. I think he's known as the guy with the 7-second memory or whatever, but it's kind of fascinating because your memory works in these various different ways, and you can remember certain things that are like called semantic memory, which is like knowing the capital of Vermont or whatever, you know, but mm-hmm. But then there's episodic memories, which are like actual memories of your past, like something that you experienced and whatnot. And so like some of his memories, they don't know if it's like he remembers having been in a bomb shelter during World War II when the Germans were bombing, but they don't know if he actually remembers that or if he just knows that people were sheltering from bombs in World War II kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we kind of use that as a jumping off point to look at how memory works, and it's actually pretty fascinating.
So he legit can only remember for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like taking a poop, you're like, where am I? What's happening? Like all of a sudden you're like, why am I in the toilet? Like, how does that?
Might just stand up and be like, what was I doing? Oh no! Oh.
Like you're eating
then
a sandwich,
cleaning up, and be like, whose mess was this? Like, why am I doing this?
You're eating a sandwich. You're like, wait, why is this? What? And then like by the time you even recover from realizing what you're doing, it would be time to do it again. I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
An actual.
Wow. I mean, that's the thing. Is like it's really impossible to even imagine what his experience of life is like.
Yeah.
He's married, and there's some documentaries out here, and we use some clips from it. But like,
are we sure he's married? Like, is
no. The wife will like leave the room for a minute and come back in, and he goes, oh, and he runs to her and holds her like he hasn't seen her in years.
Well, that'd be nice.
Well, it eventually drove her crazy. Yeah.
Oh.
I shouldn't say that. I don't know if that's true, but what was the other thing about him that was? He was like a virtuoso musician before all this happened.
Wow.
And he doesn't have any memory of it, but he can still play. He can still like play the piano and stuff. And it's like he'll sit down and he'll say, "I don't know how to play. I don't know what this is." And then he'll just like start playing. And
wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Wow.
So he remembered all that. What was the other thing? Oh, he keeps a journal. And the journal is just one line after another, after another, after another of him saying, "I am now awake."
Oh, wow.
And that he'll go back and cross out his older post because he doesn't believe that he actually wrote it, even though it's in his handwriting.
Wow.
Anyway, you'll have to see the video.
It's like Memento, right? Remember that movie?
Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating.
So that's coming up on Monday, and I've got another one the next Monday that I'm pretty excited about. It's pretty interesting. I'm taking a look at the spice trade from back in history and stuff, and looking at how that kind of made the world the way it is today.
Like salt? Is salt a part of this?
Spices.
Nutmeg, peppers, spices, paprika, yeah.
Interesting, because I know there's that whole crazy thing with salt in India, and it was like the salt trade. There was like a whole there was a book on it that just had this fascinating history of salt.
Well, that's what Columbus was trying to find was a westward.
Really?
Well, so it has something to do with the Ottomans taking over Istanbul. Mm. Well, Constantinople, they turned it into Istanbul, but they kind of controlled the spice trade that kind of flowed through there. They kind of went through that area, you know, and the Suez and whatnot. That's not the same as Istanbul, but anyway, you get the point. They kind of shut all that down. And so now they're like, okay, we need to find a new route to get to the Indies to get these spices and stuff. Cause like it was a pound of nutmeg was worth more than a pound of gold at the time.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so, what they did was they had to start sailing around Africa because they couldn't, you know, the Suez Canal didn't exist yet. So they had to go all the way around Africa. Well, the problem is there's a gyre in the South Pacific that goes up the African coast. So they were like going against the grain and it was really difficult. And they finally figured out, well, you have to go around this way and the gyre will just swing you around. So you kind of use the momentum of the gyre. But one guy went just a little bit too far. Portuguese guy, a little too far, landed in South America, and that's why people in Brazil speak Portuguese.
Wow.
Jeez.
There's all kinds of interesting stuff like that. Like there was an island called Ran. Or is it Run? I think it's Ran. Was it a past tense island or a present tense?
It used to be an island, or it's currently.
Yeah. So the Dutch, and this is another thing, is like the Dutch created the Dutch East Indies Corporation, which is like the most powerful corporation that ever existed. Mm-hmm. It had its own army with 30,000 soldiers, a company. Yeah. And they took over all these islands in the Indies and what is now Indonesia. And there was one island that the British still had control over, and they traded the island. They got the British to trade that island for another island that the Dutch owned, which is where they set up New Amsterdam. In other words, Manhattan. So they traded Manhattan to the British,
right.
And New Amsterdam became New York because of that.
Yeah.
For spice.
I remember that story.
Like spice explains so much about the world, and it's just fascinating.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Ben, do you make videos anymore? Or are you just hanging out with us?
I'm just hanging out with you guys. I got an update on the water panels coming out next week. My Rivian should be here next week as well.
Sweet.
So that's I'm going to.
Oh, wait. Yeah. You said the. Yeah.
I'm going to do all kinds of dumb things with that.
Do that thing relevant. The kid did in LA with the Model S with the Rivian.
Well, it's funny. My buddy Ryan from Kilowatts jumped his, but I remember telling him, I'm like,
it's the thing you have to do.
I'm like, no, like, you know, like that didn't count, dude. Like, this is YouTube, okay? Like, yes, technically our four wheels were off the ground, but you got to go big here. Like, you got to take it to that hill in LA and make it happen. So Rivian's coming, so I'm going to do a lot with that. I've got, it's 2-year update time on the Model Y as well. So Jenny and I've had like 3 different cars not show up that were supposed to be here, so potentially a bunch of new EVs, and then the Ford Lightning. We didn't even talk about that. Ford Lightning is now in production, and I was supposed to be there at the in Tejas this past week, but I got COVID, and so I couldn't go. So there's that. But yeah, lots of fun stuff happening in the EV world, and then I'm taking July and August off, so. You know, I'll still come hang with you nerds, but like, I'm not going to make videos or do any of that stuff or take summer off, hang with the kids, enjoy the family.
I should probably do that myself.
That's awesome.
You can come hang with my kids. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Tim, how are you doing out there? You got the news van. Oh. What's next?
Well, obviously your camera's going to quit on us before the show ends.
Again? But, of course.
Yeah. Real quick little rundown of my month. I'm going really quick going home for Mother's Day. Going to DC for the Smithsonian for an event, going to a thing in San Francisco. This is all, by the way, this is all by Thursday. and then Las Vegas for American Ninja Warrior to watch that.
Yes.
With my family. Then LA that next week for hopefully our product photo shoots, all of our new products, like our model rockets and everything. Meanwhile, the whole time I'm traveling, I'm going to be finishing up all my Elon interview stuff and getting that released. They're going to go like every 2 weeks, I think, actually, believe it or not. There's going to be about 4 parts. So it'll be a while before people. The good thing is like people are begging me like, where are they? It's going to be so outdated. We didn't really talk about anything topical. Honestly, it's like super long form, like rocket engineering. So no one's missing out on any juicy details really at this point. So. I was intentional about that. So
I really like your
anyway.
I really like your interviews with him because you guys are able to like talk about real things, because so many of the interviews Elon does are just like people that don't know anything. And so they're asking him the most basic questions and he's just repeating the same answers he said 1,000 times in other interviews. So like, I can't, like yours are some of the only times I can like actually be like, oh, okay, this will be interesting. Otherwise I'm just like, I've heard this a bazillion times. Like,
Cause he kind of has his answers down for most of those generic, like,
And that's all people ask.
Do you really think humans will get to Mars? You know, like, I hear that stuff like every interview.
Why do you do this? Well, I need a future to be excited about. Okay. Yeah. We've been hearing that for like ever. Come on.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So,
cool. So when will full self-driving happen?
Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, yeah. Well, my friends.
Okay.
We'll see you in our ludicrous.
Ludicrous.
Future.
Flopstrous.
Lobster.